And with a quick turn, skipper Alex Dock slams it in.
Here's Lindegaard making Forrest back pedal. Davis looking to help it into the path of Morris. He's found him via the deflection. It's Aaron Davis. He could win it. He probably has won it for Yeovil.
Oh, and it's an opening goal. What a start. Madden, after just 6 minutes, gives Yeovil the lead.
Stansfield, good turn away from Trott. Goal!
Hello and welcome to the Glovers Cast, the only podcast dedicated to the team that could, other results pending, celebrate Easter by winning the National League South. I'm Ian. This is Ben.
I am Ben. Yes, I've checked. I definitely am. Hello.
This is Dave.
Just check the label. Yep, that's definitely me. Yep, Dave, hi. Yep, present.
Very good. And we're kicking off this episode with a foot in the opposition camp and welcoming Chris Wade from the Talkie Talk podcast to chat about the big match today. Chris, welcome to the Glovers Cast and thanks for joining us.
You're very welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
Our pleasure. Can we start with the latest at what is happening at Playmore? Obviously, there was a big announcement a few weeks ago about sort of impending administration. There's been points deductions. What's the latest? What's the news today coming out of Playmore?
Well, who knows, quite frankly, because it's been an ever-changing situation over the last 5 weeks. But yeah, I mean, there was a pretty major announcement from our supporters trust this morning. And it's the first public show of intent and kind of information, really, that there's a clear consortium bid. So the trust have announced that they have lodged a bid for the club along with several local businessmen and owners. They've stressed that they're supporters. They've said they're not, you know, they've stressed that they're not just, you know, a load of people who think they can make some money or, you know, but build a new stadium, which is kind of how we've landed where we are. But and it's a very detailed statement as far as they can go from a legality perspective at the moment. But that's the first sign that. So the idea is that by come the start of next season, if that all goes to plan and goes through, that there would be a 50% fan ownership of the club with an intention, but a clear intention that would become 100%. Further down the line. It's a very positive statement. There are the club have then issued a statement, I wouldn't say counter statement because it doesn't significantly mention anyone, but it mentions that there are several interested parties. But the trust statement also details that from what their understanding of the bidding process has been so far, that they are the only one with a real kind of clear structured approach to what they want to do. And clearly they have a very vested interest as a supporters group. So there's a target of £150,000 that they've put on to raise, to put a significant contribution in. There's been a fund that's been kind of building through the memberships and various other donations over the last few years, which has always been for a Phoenix club. Effectively, they've always said that they've had no interest in that trying to be to buy the club, but they would have a fund to start a Phoenix club were the absolute worst to ever happen. But it seems now, given the severity of the situation we find ourselves in, they've now moved to kind of move in with some local businessmen. There were several. Neil Warnock was at the game last weekend at Playmore with a couple of other invited guests, and he's been speaking to several people as well. He's not directly involved, it seems, but so that's kind of where we are. I mean, obviously the points deduction has happened now, and it's a thing. And I didn't think We Are Staying Up would be something we'd be hearing at Playmore at the start of the season with our plans at that point. But you heard that last weekend. And we kind of move into these two games over Easter with still a very clear job to do.
How long has this behind the scenes thing been going on? And as such, does today's announcement mark the beginning of the end of it, do you think?
Potentially. I mean, the current owners owned the club for 6.5 years, and it was always a very odd setup in that we were not far from administration when he bought the club. He's a bloke who self-confessed he's not a football man, very, very rarely been at games. The last game I know he was at was the playoff final, which is what, pushing 2 years ago. And he was in it for the stadium. We all kind of knew it at the time. No one kind of said it publicly at any point. His grand plan was to buy Playmore and then sell the land and build a new stadium. He talked about, you know, hotel suite, conference facilities, abilities to hold concerts, 4G pitch, all that kind of stuff. And it was always very fanciful. The Playmore is owned by the council, and the council have been steadfast in their opinion that they will not sell Playmore at any cost to anyone. And they've kept that up. Obviously, COVID changed kind of their, you know, the possibilities for them. And then he's and then pretty much from nowhere, 5 weeks ago, he just said, "Right, that's it." He said some the statement he released said that he didn't have the funds to for the club anymore because of, you know, other personal interests and business decisions that had happened. So it's kind of almost the worst case scenario. The administration bit is the slightly the potential of it. He mentioned it in that initial statement was the slightly odd part. Because obviously there's consequences to that from him, whether there's tax reasons as to why it's in his interest to do it or what, I don't understand enough about it to know. But the National League being as they are, in the Football League, you only get docked to 10 points if you go into administration. But the National League rules are if you appoint an administrator, then you automatically lose 10 points. And everyone knew the rules. The general view is the owner's not massively concerned as to whether that's the case because he's not a hugely football man. There's a guy who is a very unpopular individual, who has who's the chief executive, effectively, who runs the club on a day-to-day basis on the ground. He's still around. So there's a bit of an unease that he could be part of one of these consortiums to remain within the club, because he's very much kind of a part of the old regime. But it's been going on for some time, but the announcement came pretty much from nowhere, that actually, that's it, I'm taking the money out.
Yeah, so is it right that you're not technically in administration, but there have been administrators appointed, but not in administration? Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. So when they made the announcement, the administrators have come in, and there's then a period of time to find a buyer, effectively. Right. And we are a couple of interested parties have had it extended. They've signed confidentiality agreements, and I think a couple have had access to the club accounts and all that kind of stuff. So kind of further down the line. But yeah, we're not in administration yet, but the points deduction has been applied because of the, as I said, because of the, you know, the appointment of them being anywhere near the club, effectively.
So by the sounds of it, you could not go into administration and yet still lose the points, which every football fan in the world would probably associate with being administration. Yeah. But that's just the league rules.
They're the league rules, and yeah, fundamentally everyone signs up to the rules at the start of the season, don't they? And I guess, and I mean, you know, we know from kind of COVID times, the National League are very, very vehement that actually, if you say at the start of the season you've got the financial, you know, the funding to see out the season, and then that changes, that you're punished by it. It seems a slightly odd thing to do that you punish it by deducting points, but I guess that's the, you see, the Premier League don't have all this financial fair play stuff, so I guess that's the thing. I mean, I would add to it. The points deduction, if we stay up, is pretty much a side issue because we've not been good enough on the pitch. So yeah, we wouldn't have got in the playoffs, regardless of whether we had the points deducted or not. So that's not a reason why we're not going to get in the playoffs. But clearly, it's a big factor as to how we find ourselves right now, that we're kind of looking over our shoulders ever slightly nervously.
But do you think that the form that you've had, which in your opinion means that you wouldn't have made the playoffs anyway, has been the cause of that, or a big part of that, has been the uncertainty and everything that's been going on off the pitch? That's surely got to have an impact, isn't it?
Yes, but again, you can only believe what comes out publicly, and the understanding from everyone that everyone has had is that no one knew anything about this. The players and the management were called to a meeting. The odd thing was Gary Johnson did a press conference, as he usually does on a Thursday, does the press call. It was on the website at 12 o'clock, and then by 1:15 the statement had gone out, and by 6:30 that evening he'd gone. Right. So it really did feel like the press conference he did was very normal. So it genuinely did feel like they just rocked up and said, right, we need to get everyone together, and announced it, and that was it. So, I mean, since then, of course, I mean, we've had a couple of, generally speaking, we've been much better structured. We've performed with much more heart and I guess quality at times. But we had two absolutely wretched performances at home to Taunton, then away at Tunbridge Angels week before last, when there really were real concerns that the wages weren't going to be paid. And it has to, you know, I mean, let's be honest, if, you know, if this was one of us and there was a threat of not being paid, of course it would affect your output. So it has to. But the wages are paid for March. And, you know, last weekend we were significantly better for a whole number of reasons.
Obviously, Gary, like you said, Gary left at the same day the administration was announced. And, you know, if you believe what you read on social media, he'd been turned on pretty heavily by the majority of Torquay supporters. Why did things break down, and how did that all unfold?
It's a good question. I think that it's worth noting that he very much became synonymous with the ownership structure. and it became a very comfortable environment. So when we lost the playoff final pushing 2 years ago, where we were penalty kicks away from beating the Football League, ever since then, it's just been a decline. And there's no two ways about it. I mean, we were last season was disastrous. My own personal view has always been we should have gone after we lost at Yeovil last New Year. At that point, he criticised the fans who stood in the pouring rain, which it always is whenever we play at Yeovil. And the performance was tepid. I thought in that game we were the better side in lots of ways, but we didn't do like scoring, which was the problem in a lot of games. And then as soon as you concede one, that's it. And that's been a lot of the problems away from home this season. But from then on, it just became a struggle. And again, I think Chalky and Yeovil were both pretty much unique, I would have thought, in getting relegated and both retaining the manager, because you really don't see that very often. And I guess the club were hopeful, hoodwinked, whatever phrase you want to use, because he did it so effectively last time in this division that it would be simple this time. But recruitment has been at the core of everything that's gone wrong for him when he was manager at the club. And that's been the same again. A whole group of players came in last summer that on paper were players that had played on loan towards the end of last year. The likes of Lewis Collins, who was from a League Two club, has been very disappointing. Jack Stobbs has been one of our better players, missed a big chunk of this season with a serious hamstring injury. We've just had a whole succession of players for a number of reasons just haven't worked. The injury to Aaron Jarvis has been the biggest blow probably, because he's been our main man, our talisman since he joined, and he missed the best part of 4 months through the middle section of the season. And the way he behaved in post-match interviews, he criticised fans quite openly. And I would imagine it's very easy. It's very hard. I'm always sympathetic to a point with managers because they have to do these things straight after games when emotions are very high. But he did it repeatedly. It had become a very... The one thing talking what Sheridan said when we spoke to her after the game at the Yeovil game at Torquay in the league was that she said you could feel the unrest in the stadium pretty much from the off when we got battered that night. So it's not hard to feel the unrest, but you could feel the unease. And so if somebody external to the situation could feel it, and it just got worse and worse to the point where there were demonstrations and he just became very obstinate and was quite clearly not going to walk away from something that couldn't have been giving him much joy and was just basically pretty miserable for everyone.
Yeah. And I was there that night, and there was that feeling. You could sense it, but also there were supporters behind. I was doing the comms that night, and the supporters behind were saying, we've got so many injuries. But if you look at the players that are injured, you've talked about Jarvis, but you've got players like Kev Dawson, who's didn't have a great injury record when he was playing for us. You've got a lot of more experienced players who were there when you went up first time from National League South and are still there as well.
Yeah, I think Kev Dawson's a good example because Kev Dawson came on loan probably this slightly earlier than this time last year, and it was a very underwhelming signing when you're trying to avoid relegation, signing a player from a club in the lower league to you. But he was outstanding everywhere, committed, passionate. So when we signed him, everyone was, you know, was like, oh, what a signing, a full season of him, wow. But we signed him with at that stage, undiagnosed injury, which turned out to be a hamstring issue that needed surgery there, where he had to have it removed from the bone and reattached. And he's only played, in the last month? Mm. And I think, I mean, we have had shocking injuries. So, you know, there was no two ways about that. Asa Hall is very hit and miss with fitness. Tom Lapsley is very hit and miss with fitness. We lost Brad Ash for 6 weeks around the Christmas time when there's a lot of games. And we just didn't replace these people effectively. You know, we didn't. You know, Jarvis, we had a couple of young lads. We've got a lot of young lads on loan. Some have worked, some haven't. And we've just had a lot of injuries that have just meant. But I don't know that's an excuse. But we've had a lot of injuries over Johnson's time. It's not an isolated issue. So, again, and there was a player who did an interview on one of our, not on ours, but on one of the other Torquay fan sites. And he said that training was just always just too intense. It was too much. So that we've had a lot of hamstrings, a lot of muscle injuries over the last 2 or 3 years. So it's not isolated that people got injured a lot. So it's nothing new for us.
Those names are pretty important names as well, actually. Those names that you just rattled off are getting into that starting lineup 9 times out of 10, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely they are. And I think what was key last Saturday when we played Hampton, who've had, ironically, got a lot of injury issues themselves, but were quite underwhelming on the day, was that's the first time our main five experienced players, Mark Halstead in goal, Asa Hall played in the middle of a back three, Dean Moxie to his left, with Tom Lapsley in midfield and Kev Dawson. That's the first time those five have played in a game together. And actually, that shows you the extent of the problems that there have been. And we were just much more organised. Mox is brilliant. He's a lot of things, but he's not a talker. And you could hear Acer from where I sit in the main stand. You could hear him shouting at players, here, now, and really kind of, you know, coordinating and leading from the back. And we were just a lot more organised, a lot more structured. So absolutely, those five of our main players, they haven't been available enough and certainly not consistently together.
And how available are they likely to be today as we listen to this?
Are they likely to be available, did you say?
Yeah.
Good question. It was a bit of a left field selection, Acer playing the middle of the back three, but at his stage of his career, he struggles to go up and down quite a lot now from central midfield. So, I mean, I think him and Mox are fine. Kev Dawson limped off in the second half, holding his left hamstring, but he seemed okay, just where there was a bit of cramp. So I think so. The question will be whether or not they risk all of them for two games in the best part of 3 days, really, because that's the problem with they can't do it. But yeah, I mean, Jarvis doesn't sound like he'll be available tomorrow. He missed a game last week through illness, ironically, but he had a knee issue he picked up at Tunbridge a couple of weeks ago, which doesn't sound great. But again, the natural replacement for him, lad we signed who played for us 10 years ago, actually, Dwayne Euphoria Chimpong, who we re-signed a couple of months ago, he then picked up a knock and he wasn't available last week. But right. He sounds like he'll be available. In terms of physicality and a bit of strength, I would envisage he would come back in. But Jarvis doesn't sound so likely, I don't think, tomorrow. Unless they're hoodwinking us all and he's available.
Without trying to sound massively too disrespectful, is the Western Supermare game on Monday slightly more important? Or is it at the stage where you just need to get as clear as you possibly can?
I think we need to get as clear as we can as soon as we can. Mm-hmm. I think that's fine, but I'm happy to say that. But I think before last week's game, I was a little bit nervous because you looked at Hampton, who were on a cracking run.
Yeah.
Obviously, then we've got the game tomorrow, which is pretty daunting when you look at the table. But I think before last week, we were, Mike, and the general view is 9 points, 50 points probably should be enough. So that's the three home games. So we've won the game that on paper is the hardest of the three home games. But yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. But I think what last week has done is it's kind of made tomorrow a bit of a free hit for us, really, because we can turn up and just give it a go. And if we get beaten, we get beaten. And we've still got, you know, Monday. I think Monday is a more important game that we win. If we get anything tomorrow, then that's probably a bonus, yeah. But I think if we can win, but we've also got, we've got five away games left to go in the last seven. And our away form is frankly horrific. We haven't won away since November. We've won three games away all season, all on Astro pitches. We haven't won on grass away all season. We've conceded buckets of goals. And that's been a massive issue. But we've still got to go to Taunton and Truro and Welling and Bath and Yeovil. So we've got very winnable games outside of tomorrow. Am I confident we can go to any of these games and win? Well, there's no evidence to suggest you should be confident. So, who knows? But tomorrow, with the way we've played at times, we might just rock up and win tomorrow. You just don't know because, you know, the Yeovil are getting a bit nervous. They've lost the last two at home, haven't they? So, but I think the good thing is we can just rock up and give it a good go. See what we get. Hopefully keep it quiet in the first 20, 30 minutes and then see if we can bring the home crowd into it in terms of getting on their backs and, you know, not in the air. But if we can see an early goal, we've lost 18 games and in 15 of them we've conceded the first goal. So we don't have a good record of going behind and coming back.
If you don't do well on grass, you'll be fine at Taunton then, won't you? Truro.
Well, yeah, I mean, that game's just been rearranged. It's the last midweek of the season. It was scheduled to be on the Wednesday, but they've pulled it back to the Tuesday so they can play on the Thursday as well. So, who knows if that's going to go ahead. But yeah, I mean, obviously we're going to Truro at Gloucester now. In a couple of weeks' time. But it's an incredible situation, isn't it?
Yeah. And Mark, if Mark Cooper's listening to this and he hears you say the word, it's a free hit, he's going to scream and throw his iPhone. Exactly, yeah. Every week, he says, every supporter, every manager you hear says, coming to Yeovil's a free hit. And you've done it. You've finished your bingo card. Helps.
But I think in our situation, it is. And I think last week makes it a more comfortable experience for us tomorrow. It probably won't be, but I think just in terms, because if we say we'd lost last week, and we'd be properly looking over our shoulders by that point, lose tomorrow, a couple other teams pick up a few points, and then we'd be properly looking over our shoulder. But yeah, I think if we can, you know, if we can give it a good shot tomorrow, maybe get something and then win on Monday, 3 or 4 points this bank holiday would be a good return, I think, for us.
I did notice, to move on to the game specifically, that earlier on in the season, we'd taken your National League South in its current format attendance record, and then we took it again ourselves. But you might have it back tomorrow as part of the game with us.
I mean, they sold 5,000 last time I saw, but yeah, it was that game was the game when we'd won the title. It was the last game of the season, ironically, which we lost at home on the last day of that season. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, Yeovil, again, that's the nonsense of a club like Yeovil being in the level that they're at, because, you know, the support fan base is there. And I mean, are there incentive, you know, prices to get these crowds so high, or is it just supporting a winning team? But it's phenomenal to see crowds like this. You know, you've got bigger crowds at your place, clubs like Yeovil and Torquay at times. You're not getting in some League One games, which kind of sums up how the British pyramid works.
Yeah. Yeah. Many would have seen this game when the fixtures came out at the start of the season.
I think we all did.
The potential to be the decider.
Yeah.
How shocked are you at how the season has gone from your perspective?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. You can't be anything but shocked. I mean, you can't dress it up any other way. It's disappointing as much as anything, just because I don't think... I think the frustration is quite often, like that Taunton game we played at home 12th of March, we got beaten 3-0 by Taunton at home. And you looked at that team we had out that night. Earlier in the season, I felt a bit sorry for some of the players because we had so many injuries. It was a bunchy... kids, and you thought they're just not good enough for this level. They shouldn't be playing at this level. They're doing their best, but they're just not good enough. Whereas you look at that team we played against Taunton, you thought that team is good enough. That team is more than good enough for this level, and we just got absolutely battered. Let's be clear here. Taunton absolutely dominated us. They worked hard on us. They closed us down. They pressed for 90 minutes as well for a so-called full-time club that we are. But yeah, it's been a desperate season. There's no two ways about it, and. I don't think anyone saw it coming, because I think we're all quite happy with the squad. And I think what's interesting was, you know, when we spoke, you know, to some, you know, the Yeovil fans I know, Sharon said before, the two feels at the two clubs were very different. Torquay, it was just about promotion. What do you want? Promotion. There's only one goal, promotion. And everyone, and I was like, well, that's very good. But if you're saying that, you've then got to go and do it, haven't you? Whereas Yeovil were very much more, it felt from the outside, much more kind of reserved. And let's see how we go. Let's find our feet in this league. Let's see how we go. And then... I guess you can then that be that much more, I don't know, magnanimous if you then do it, which we kind of had a very clear goal and have failed spectacularly without all the off the field problems, because on the field has been nowhere good enough. But I mean, our home form has been largely pretty good. Our away form is just dreadful, absolutely awful. And that's why we're nowhere near.
And you're on your way up tomorrow, or today, as people are listening, you're coming to the game. You've got a bit of a Yeovil connection, right?
I have, yes. But my wife is from Yeovil, just totally randomly, because I met her when I lived in Exeter. But last 19 years or so, I've had plenty of visits to Yeovil to see her friends and family and things. So yeah, I've a good friend of hers, she went to school with her husband, and their boys are massive Yeovil Town fans, and they go to the Frank Newble Academy stuff that he does, and so they're massive fans. So we're going to go to their house and have some lunch beforehand, and then I go to the games with my dad and my two boys as well, who are 11 and 6, who love it. So in fairness, that's kind of kept me going at times this season, because when you're 11 and 6, everything's exciting. So regardless of some of the football at times, you know, at times under Johnson in the middle of winter, it was a real, and it shouldn't be like that. And that's been the difference since we've had the last few weeks. But everything's exciting to the boys. So they're going to look forward to it. So it'll be a good game. It'll be a good game. It'll be wet, because it always is whenever we play at Yeovil. But we'll enjoy the day.
Did you allow him to swear at Gary Johnson? Was that allowed? Did you give him a pass?
No. That's been the beauty about me going to football with my children more, is that you have to be much more controlling the things that you say. Maybe not a referees at times, my dad might argue, but certainly not with the language that maybe it used to be when I was younger. But they've been to Yeovil before. My oldest was there when we got beaten 6-2 in that horrific game a couple of years ago, as well as last year. So he's well versed. And then he didn't go to the game when we won in injury time the year after. He's 2 from 2 defeats. So we'll see how tomorrow goes.
Well, from our side, fingers crossed the record sticks. Think it's fair to say from our side, we know exactly what you're going through as supporters of Torquay. Mm-hmm. You know, we've been there with shit ownership, and we solidarity against it for you. And after the game tomorrow, hopefully you can pick yourself up and stay away from
absolutely.
Trouble.
And I have to say that one of the things that's been, I guess, from a fan's perspective, the word Aaron Downes keeps using is humbling. And from within the club, that's absolutely the right word. But I guess that the reaction from the football world, not just at our level, but just from, like, we played at Weymouth 3 weeks ago, and they donated £5 for every away ticket sold. back to Torquay and things like, you know, the response from the football community, as they call it, has been phenomenal. And the one thing I must make sure I do as an individual, I think a lot of us should do, is hopefully when we're through this and then this happens again to another club, which with the current financial models of football clubs in England, I have no doubt it will, that you remember what other people did for you. Because, you know, last weekend we had a Devon Day, they called it, when there was no league games and there were a lot of Exeter fans, a lot of Plymouth fans came to our game last week and things like that. So with the support from outside of our club has been extraordinary. So, yeah, absolutely. I think if we get through this, then there's a big reason. That is a big reason, partly why.
Thanks for your time, Chris. Enjoy the game.
Absolutely, Andrew. Absolutely.
Too much.
We'll see.
Well, Chris was nice, wasn't he?
Very nice guy, man. Yeah, very smiley as well. Not that you can see that on audio, but very smiley, considering what he's had to put up with this season. Not sure I'd be that smiley.
I don't know. We've had our unsmiley phase.
You're smiley now, though, aren't we?
You're very smiley this year, Dave.
Yeah, my voice may not get across my smileiness, but I am fairly smiley.
You know what? I think it does. Your voice comes across as smiley.
You think? Okay. Yeah. I think I've got a smiley voice.
You're not quite Carol smiley, but you are smiley.
No. Yeah, no, I wouldn't want to be her anyway. But, you know, when you've got back-to-back wins under your belt like I have, I didn't want to bring it up again, but as you forced me.
Yeah, you're right, you didn't, did you? You didn't.
But yes, nice guy.
Nice guy.
He's not smiling on Saturday, or on Friday even, but yeah.
I'll tell you who else is a nice guy who's been spotted in some pre-season? Training. Training
pictures. Pre-season
pictures
as well.
and a HP Source video this week is the bags man himself, Mr. Rhys Murphy.
Si, senor. Yeah.
Are we? Is this mind games? Manager said it's too soon. Is it ever too soon?
Well, you know, a sneaky place on the bench. A sneaky place on the bench. Give him the last 20 minutes. Come on, bag hat trick against Weymouth. You'd build the statue then, wouldn't you?
Why has it got to be a sneaky place on the bench?
Well, you know, it's like a cheeky Nando's. It's a cheeky place on the bench. Doesn't have to mean anything, does it? It's just
I like the idea of it. I like the idea of him just cowering behind the benches at Hewish Park, poking his head out every now and again.
I reckon what we should do is we should make all our substitutes dress up like the Masked Singer, and then they don't know who they are until they come on the pitch, or they see the team sheet with all their names written down. They don't know which one's which.
Which one's which?
Which one's the giant fish? Oh my God, it's Rhys Murphy!
Surely it's not Alex Fisher.
Oh, of course, yeah.
That's the trick, though, isn't it? That's the trick.
Got my place wrong there, didn't I? Yeah.
He got his place wrong. Nice.
Well done, Dave.
Nice.
Ian's going to kick me out of the chat. Ben's very pleased with me.
I am incredibly pleased. Absolutely.
Ben's going through his smiley phase of the podcast.
I am, yes. Yeah. It's got... We're a little bit giddy. I like the fact that we're a little bit giddy. I think it's time to acknowledge what this weekend might mean and might mean towards. If we have a good weekend, then we'll be very giddy in a podcast and a half time.
A podcast and a half?
Well, going into Worthing, potentially.
Okay, half of this one, yeah. And the next one.
Yeah,
we're only as good as our next one. Yeah, I don't know. Are we being too giddy? I think there's that big game excitement and feel, and Torquay obviously are struggling, inconsistent. We can't get ahead of ourselves because, don't necessarily believe in scripts, but packing the park, a lot of away fans coming up, us getting all excited about, oh, we could win the league at Weymouth if Chelmsford lose. it's set up.
I think, yeah, but you are right. It is set up. But I think we've been here twice already so far this season. in the other games where we broke the record, the Weymouth and the Braintree game, within a week of one another. We had that huge week. And I think it's probably fair to say that every facet of the football club stood up and was counted that week. And we're kind of asking for something similar here, aren't we? We're asking for huge stadiums to be filled out. We think we are closing in potentially on, well, we know we're above 5,000. Let's hope that six gets knocked and we start talking about records again. We know that at least 2,000 Yeovil fans are going to be at Weymouth on Monday. We saw a sneaky extra 150 go unannounced tickets. It popped up in our WhatsApp chat and we know they've now gone. So we think it's at least 2,150 plus anyone that's willing to stand in the Seagull bothering end. There's that expectation and there's that sort of support that comes with it. And yet, I'm not surprised. Like, we've done that twice already and we've risen to that challenge. Our players have risen to that challenge. Mark Cooper has risen to the challenge. The football club as a whole has risen to that challenge. And I hope that a lot of the conversations this week have been around, you've done this before. You've done big games, big moments before. And having Murphy back as a presence, having Smith back as a presence in and around the group, who were instrumental in some of those moments, I think that I think it genuinely stands us in good stead. And yet we've got people like Frank Nuble who are going to sit there and be absolutely respectful and say, we know we're in for a challenge, but it's a challenge I think we can meet. So I think, personally, I think we've straddled the line of confidence and respect and humility that's probably about right. And now we've just got to go out there and do it.
I think if there's one thing I picked up from what Chris said was the, we'll try and keep it tight for 20 minutes, get the home fans on the players' back. Yeah. That just shows that if we do that, we're playing exactly into what they want us to do. So there's a lot to be said for keeping that support going for as long as you can possibly contain yourself.
It's such a really important statement to make. Today is not the day to get on the back if the ball is going sideways. It just is not. It's got a feeling of... I was trying to describe my feeling to somebody at work recently, and the only way I could properly describe it was, do you remember Ben Stokes going ballistic against the Aussies at Headingley with Jack Leach at the other end? I know you're not both massive cricket people, but
I do not remember that.
So anyone who's a cricket person will know this. 2019, Headingley, Ben Stokes, he's out there batting basically on his own. Jack Leach, who can barely hold a bat, he's spending every other minute trying to defog his glasses that he has to wear under his helmet. And he goes completely ballistic. And this is the most enjoyable, incredible batting innings you've ever seen in your life. At no point does he get nervous. At no point does he get worried until he needs double figures for England to win this test match. He's just at 150-odd and made it look really easy. But the final 10 were edgy. He only just gets one over the rope. He runs a dodgy single he probably shouldn't have done. He nearly gets Jack Leach run out, or Jack Leach nearly runs himself out. And he gets a dodgy LBW given his way. But he gets over that line. And it feels like that's what this last few weeks has been for us, of we're okay, we are Ben Stokes, we've swashbuckled our way through the season and it's fine. We just need to find a way now to manage these final few overs of the day and get through. And I think from everything we're told and from everything we see, we are getting that balance right. We are managing that expectation, and that expectation has risen as it did with Ben Stokes in 2019. And now it's just a case of, can we find a couple more big booming boundaries to get us over the line? And I believe we can Ben Stokes it over the course of the next 48, 72 hours.
Surely get us over the rope, not get us over the line in that analogy, isn't
it? In the analogy, it is a rope. Okay. Yes. But that's the best sort of way I can describe it. And if there's people listening that are cricket fans that will understand it, that's how I see these final next few weeks. We need a big old reverse.
Ben Stokes it.
Yeah, I see a big old reverse sweep over. Well, I guess by the time he turned around, it was over square leg, but for six.
At this point, Ben's just showing off.
If you said it was over any kind of it, I'd have gone, yeah, you're absolutely right, mate. Yeah, exactly. Over square leg, yeah. They got square legs just... for how do they run with square legs?
At this point, he's just hitting googlies in the covers for ducks, really, isn't he? That's
what
all
are ducks doing there? Why are you feeding them cricket balls?
As long as there's no golden ones, it's all right.
Yes.
You should try and get a cricket shout into the next match you go to, Ben.
Yes.
Bowl it forward, Cooper.
Give him a bouncer.
Hit it for six, Frank.
Oh dear. Okay.
Catch it.
I was trying to make an analogy that I thought would make sense, and you have ridiculed me once again.
No, we've not ridiculed you.
We just don't understand what you're saying, but we're sure you're absolutely right.
The cricket portion of the listenership, all three of them, will be fully behind it.
I guarantee you, Clevo is standing up now, applauding what you're saying, whilst Ben coughs himself to death.
I know, yeah, sorry. Anyway, move on.
So, yeah. We're excited. Halfway down from north of the wall.
I'm not sure where
that is in Game of Thrones lore, but he's Worcester.
Worcester. Yeah, I don't think Worcester's in Game of Thrones. Not the series that I've watched anyway. So, yeah, no sign of Errol Pope here either, although I am close to
Worcester. Was there ever any sign of Errol Pope?
Well, you know, if Errol Pope falls in the woods, does he make a sound? Who knows?
I don't know.
No,
no one knows.
No
That's quite
one
a good
knows.
Segue. That's quite a good segue, actually, Dave. Because sure. today the accounts have been published. The audited financial accounts for the year ending June 2023 have been published.
Do we call it the stewardship years? Is that what we call it? Yeah.
Yeah.
One part of it was in a sewer ship and the other part was a stewardship, maybe. Yeah,
nice. That's like topical with like the general news as well.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. We're ejecting effluent into local football teams. Yeah,
well, we weren't.
No, we weren't. We weren't. No, someone was,
although some might say we were. anyway, there was a statement alongside the accounts released by the club saying that the financial state of the football club at the time it was acquired by the Helier Group cannot be underestimated. There were substantial financial obligations due to HMRC, kit manufacturers, and to integral suppliers. In the final weeks of the previous ownership, the club had been propped up by individuals who should not have been placed in that position. We made it clear from the outset that we would try to be transparent, and that is the aim of this statement. Save where there is legal requirement, we have sought to be as open as possible. The accounting period also includes a time when the club was under stewardship. Whilst they may have acted with the best of intentions, this was a period which saw contracts agreed which were not sustainable and were not approved by the manager and have proved difficult to resolve. Since the acquisition, we have worked tirelessly to improve the financial situation of the club, give Mark the resources he needs, and to improve the fan experience. We would like to think that we have achieved all of these. It was essential that the club returned to the National League in order to be a viable going concern. Since acquisition, the Helier Group has provided funds to the club in the region of £1.7 million. The majority of this has been converted to equity, such that these are not treated as director's loans. This can be shown in the events after the reporting date. One of the most straightforward ways for the club to be sustainable is for attendances to continue to increase. We are extremely grateful to the fans for their phenomenal support throughout the season and are excited for a bumper bank holiday crowd. The Helier Group are fully committed to the football club and providing the financial support that it needs. We anticipate that there will be a reduced loss in the accounts for the period ending 30th of June 2024 due to efficiency savings and the falling away of creditors who were incurred during the previous ownership. Ends.
That was a party political broadcast on behalf of. Yeah.
So that's the club statement.
You have to get your proper voice out then,
which
by
is the only thing we're going to understand from the whole lot of this, because the account are just a hell of a lot of numbers. And I'll be honest, I haven't had a chance to have a look at. I mean, the numbers.
There's quite a jump. There's an extra digit from 2022 to 2023.
Yeah.
The the equity, if you look at the bottom line of the equity, it goes from minus 260, so debt of 264,363 in 2022 to 1.7 million negative equity at the end of that year. So
my immediate question is that where the quoted 1.7 million from the statement comes in? And this is the bit where I don't really know and I probably shouldn't be posing ridiculous questions. But when you hear the Helier Group has backed the club to the tune of 1.7 million or whatever the statement says, those two numbers marry up kind of uncoincidentally, maybe? I don't know.
They're the only two numbers that I can see in that statement and those set of results, which look similar. So I'm going to guess you're right, but it would be a complete guess. The other number that definitely seems to be in there is approximately £1 million loan, which I'm guessing is Sport England still, because that will still be on there, won't it? As Ian said, there's debtors, so presumably that's people we owe money to. Are they debtors? Yeah, they must be, mustn't they? Yeah. So that's that went up from 191 to 645. So I'm not sure how many of the stewardship signings figures in that, but I imagine there's people we probably owe money to. This statement makes references to kit deals and things like that, doesn't it? So that number could well be partly associated to that. And then there's something in there talking about amount owing to group undertakings. Now, again, I'm not going to say, oh, group undertakings, because I honestly don't know what that means. But I assume that the group is the company that we're talking about here. So is that money that's owed to other people? Is that he who shall not be named, or is that? Because we know that Norman Haywood and John Fry keep their little Hewish Park Stadium partnership company that keeps being refreshed every year. So that's obviously still knocking about. I'm not sure what kind of involvement there is in that. But I'm not going to sit here and claim to understand what these figures mean. And we'll ask a few questions to some people who will understand these numbers far better than I do. So I think the only thing I can say from the statement is, it's a good thing that there's a statement with it, in as much as that openness and transparency. If there was someone there who could explain what the numbers mean as well, that would be very helpful for an ignoramus like myself. But we'll ask some friends of the pod and see if we can get someone who can explain what all the numbers mean.
Just to circle back, a debtor is a company or individual who owes money.
Oh, so okay. So they owe us money.
Yeah. So the credit and the creditor is the one.
Oh, okay. Oh, well, there you go. You see, suddenly I thought, well, that's we're an extra 500K there. And now we're owed an extra 500K if the debtor numbers have gone up. So
yeah, but
I'm feeling more positive all the time.
But the creditor number has gone from 956,000 to 1,933,000.
This is the media writing a negative narrative.
You're right.
Again,
you're absolutely right.
There's me trying to claim her on Easy Street, but
Ben, stop dealing in facts here, please.
Yeah, sorry. I mean, I'm just looking at numbers in brackets, thinking,
Why are they in brackets for? Can I take them out of the brackets? Yeah.
It's much easier if they're color coded.
Yeah.
Put the good red ones in black red. And the bad ones in black in red.
Yeah.
It's not like. All this legal jargon that gets me going. Don't understand it. Don't like it. What's a tangible fixed asset?
You're the city editor.
No, I'm not. Stop this.
Tangible fixed asset is an actual thing, like a football stadium. It's presumably a tangible fixed asset.
Because that's gone up.
Yeah.
That's gone up from 94,000 to 244,000.
Considering
in 2021, it was one point
something million, yeah.
Yeah, because we own the stadium.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah. What's an intangible asset?
A football player, I imagine, maybe.
Surely a player is tangible.
Yeah, but I'm not sure if you can say you can. Well, maybe you can, actually.
Maybe it's like a... Maybe we've trademarked...
A lottery ticket. A scratch card.
It could intangible, be worth a million. So you see that there's a number three next to it, and that further down the document, that goes to another thing. So intangible fixed assets are player contracts.
Oh.
There you go.
Amortization and impairment. and stuff like that. Yeah, tangible fixed assets, things, objects.
Here endeth the lecture of football club finances for idiots. Or
don't
by
worry,
idiots,
Kieran
maybe.
Maguire, we're not coming for you.
Kieran will sleep sleep safely in bed tonight.
Yes, but I suppose the big thing is that in bracket number is a lot bigger from the season before, but likewise, the statement that comes along with it and the commitment and the transparency is very welcome considering previous years when stuff was just shoved up with no narrative, no explanation or no sort of...
It wasn't even shoved up, was it? It was just it was just published on companies out. Nobody ever mentioned it unless we brought it up, really.
I found a line that just tells us something else, actually. Bank loans and overdrafts, which falls within that creditors thing, included within the bank loans and overdrafts are 32,368, which is the bounce back loan, which is guaranteed by the UK government, and the remaining 1,030,515 is the loan that was issued by the English Sports Council, which is repayable over a 20-year term and is secured by way of a floating charge over all the assets of the company. So it is. You're looking at a number of 1,062,000. Well, there it is, basically.
Sport England.
Yeah. I wonder when we were told we were going to get that as a grant.
Yeah. It was going to get wiped out, wasn't it? Because he who shall not be named he was on a promise, wasn't he, from the sports minister. He's probably not the sports minister anymore. And if he is, he definitely won't be by the end of this year. Little political jibe in there as well.
It's okay. Good. Yeah.
Should we take some questions?
Go on. Are any of them about amortization?
It's amortization.
Oh, okay.
amortization.
Back, back in the Game of Thrones now, aren't we? But...
Yes, we are. Toby Bushnell would like to know if we think we're going to break the National League South attendance record again.
In its current format. Because otherwise someone... namely him who's down here on the old Zoom call below my face, will point out that in previous incarnations at this level, it's considerably higher.
8,007. That's the target, boys.
Cheers.
Where were you at Enfield?
Including 150 in trees outside.
Counting them all individually.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I think we're going to get close. I think we're right on the cusp. What was it, 6301? Is that what we did, Weymouth?
Yes, Taunton was more.
Sorry,
wasn't it?
Taunton. What was the Taunton one? Quick, Google.
I think it was 6301.
Well, yeah, so it was Taunton. So Weymouth was 6-2 something, and then we snuck above it.
Yeah, Taunton was good. Yeah.
Should we have a number guess? Should we just pluck a number out of thin air each?
6530.
Oh, record broken in Perkins House. Dave?
Yeah. Torquay bigger supporters. More of them will come.
Yeah.
6792.
I am going to go 6399. Get there early.
So we're all...
Get your parking app sorted. Arrive in plenty of time to pick your tickets up.
Yeah.
Get inside.
I was just looking at our stats, and there's only two figures that don't have the attendance next year, and one of them is drawn out.
Yeah, according to Wikipedia, 6301 Yeovil versus Taunton. We're on
for
the highest average as well, aren't we?
There's probably a big picture of the attendance in the match report.
Yeah, 6301. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Including 406 away supporters.
There'll be 406.
We've only played small teams that don't bring up that have done that record. So
they'll easily do that. I do enjoy the lowest home attendance, which is still listed technically as Truro, who had 52 out of 2,812 against Torquay back in 2019, which I quite like.
I reckon they could beat that this season.
I was just about to say, I reckon they already have.
Yeah, maybe put a decimal point in the middle of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's
another one from Toby. Quick fire one here. Most memorable on-field and off-field moments so far this season?
The on-field one for me.
Go on, Dave, go on.
The on-field one for me is definitely still Morgan Williams' winner at Worthing. In terms of, obviously, it doesn't seem as significant now, but for a long time, it was quite significant. That was definitely that was a highlight for me. Off the
Liquid
field.
Football against Taunton at home, and Pink Day Braintree.
I think Pink Day for me too. That moment where they sort of presented the massive checks at halftime or before the match. That was cool. That was really cool. On the pitch, we've had a few. I'm gonna go for Alex Fisher's returning goal. That was a really nice moment.
Beautiful.
Dave, anything off the pitch?
The shithole at Braintree. The shithole behind the goal at Braintree. That's my most memorable moment of this season because it made me realise, Jesus, we've got to get out of this league. I mean, I thought it anyway, but yeah.
Harry Eaton, how worried should we be about Taunton and Truro not finishing the season with all the postponements? My understanding is if their games are invalidated due to not finishing the season, our lead would be cut by 4 points or so. Ben, how worried are you?
It's the only thing that stops us winning this title.
I think they're going to end up playing them, aren't they? They'll get there one way or another.
I've seen that they've tried to bolster their teams today. Today was the last day that they can sign players. And I see that, is it Jay Murray, Scott's brother, has gone into Taunton on a bit of a, just to put extra numbers in because they're going to get through some players. So I think, I think they're going to, by hook or by crook, it's going to be every other day. I did see Paul Watton on BBC almost trying to play a little bit of the sob story about it. I'm like, well, you shared with Plymouth Parkway and Taunton, mate.
Yeah.
Like, take some responsibility at your side too. You shouldn't have to be at Gloucester. This could have been sorted a long, long time ago. I know the amount of rain has been ridiculous, but don't go and share with Taunton.
Well, Plymouth Parkway, it's not like that's renowned for being a fabulous surface, is it?
They've had to play at home park. Mm. And they've got a massive hole in their pitch.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
There we go. Not so kind of worried, but not that worried. No. But we'll be okay.
Yeah.
It'll be fine. It'll be fine.
It will be fine.
Mr. Pro Pilot, opinions on getting tickets in the home end for an away game only if the away tickets are completely sold out. You ever done that?
I haven't, no. There's never been that much of a scramble for me to get an away ticket.
Yeah.
I think both of you have done that. You've just called the press box in a home area because you're just hooligans. Hooligans, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ben upsetting Wrexham fans
that's the only time I've ever felt a bit, I should be a little tiny bit careful.
Yeah.
Plastic.
What are my thoughts on it? In an unsegregated match? No, definitely not. Not bothered. We do need to have an element of care about Monday. And I know that that's what this question is alluding to. Be a little tiny bit sensible, please. Having a match abandoned or having flares on the pitch or something that costs us financially or otherwise in the near future would be a very, very, very bad idea. So, Grandad Ben says be careful.
Grandad Ben. I'll just whip over to a couple of Facebook ones first before we take the last one. Has Agent Johnson finished for the season or should we expect him to be installed as manager of our Seaside Friends and continue the fine work he has done all season? No.
I don't think so. No.
I think he's got better things to do with his time to go there, isn't he?
Yeah. And Jonathan Adams says, who is looking forward to the Easter weekend the most? Definitely a 7 for me. Train at 8:45 in the morning down to Hewish Park, hopefully to a packed Thatcher's with Bye Boy.
I'm going to say Jonathan.
Yeah, do you know what? I'm excited on other people's behalf. I got tickets for my dad and my nephew to go to Huish Park. They're in the family area. I know they're excited. I know a number of people that are excited, and I'm excited for everybody. I really am. I can't wait to see the pictures. Can't wait to see that atmosphere and get behind them. Get behind them. Give them everything, because they've given us everything for a season. It's the least they deserve.
I'll be excited when they get there.
Yes.
I've got the,
if I ever get there.
I've got to get between Portishead and Taunton first, by the sounds of it. Easter traffic. Jesus Christ. Yeah.
Come off at Bridgewater.
Yeah, maybe. I will go whichever way Google Maps directs me. That's what I'll do.
Yes. Okay. I'm buzzing, and I hope that, selfishly hope that Chelmsford win, so that then when I come back from holiday for Worthing, I'm there to see it. But we'll be happy either way, of course. But if Chelmsford can win, that would be great. And finally, an international one. An international one from USU. With the Euro 2024 lineup now complete, who's, cliche alert, the group of death, the dark horses, and your tip for winning it? Looking at the groups.
I was going to say, I think Hugh would agree with me that Scotland are going to win it. I know he's a big Scotland fan, so I'm sure he'd definitely go for Scotland. He's not. He hates Scotland, but I had to say that. Don will appreciate me saying that.
I think that I'm going to say this. I think they're getting out of that group.
Germany, Hungary, Switzerland.
I think they'll get out of that group.
Just looking through there.
There is.
I think the group of death is Group B for me. Spain, Croatia, Italy, and Albania's there. But yeah, there's no other teams that have got three.
An honourable mention for Group D.
I was going to say D, yeah.
Yeah, Netherlands, France, Poland. Austria.
Yeah, I'd say.
But I don't think Netherlands are. This isn't 98 with Cliver and Bergkamp up front, is it? And the De Boers and Mark Overmars and Van der Sar. Like, that's absolute vintage Netherlands.
Was that Dutch accent in there? Did you go full Steve McLaren?
That's my Steve McLaren. Yeah, we are what you see. Underdogs?
Underdogs. No, I'd probably, yeah, B. The more I look at it, I do feel for Albania in Group B, I have to say. Yeah. Yeah, we'll go for that as a group of death.
Dark horses, probably Netherlands, I think. Am I dark horses?
Oh, no, this isn't 1998 Netherlands. I'm not having that. If we had the De Boers in there.
There's no Ruud Gullit anymore, mate.
No, exactly. Yeah, they haven't even got Robin Van Persie.
Rijkaard, Van Basten.
Yeah, exactly. Rubbish.
I don't know.
Portugal?
I spent all week at work talking to the good people of TalkSport 2, the social, about this, and I have no opinion.
Oh, are you going to end up on like the FA Trophy draw?
I'd love to. I would absolutely love to see the FA Trophy draw. Let's have a look. England are favourites, 3-1. What do we think to that?
Well,
no.
Happy? No. France, 100-30.
We might be favourites, but how many years have hurt?
Enough. Germany on home soil are 11-2. Don't mind that, They had a really good international break. They beat the French, they beat the Dutch. I'm going for Germany to win it on home soil. Feels dirty to even say it.
Are they? But we're talking dark horses. Are they a dark horse?
Dark, no, far from it. depending on the way.
All over the place as well. It's not just home soil, isn't it? All over the place this year.
It's just in Germany. They scrapped
all over the place in Germany, yeah.
Yeah. It's not just at the Allianz Arena. It's within the confines of Germany. My dark horse, depending on how the draw falls, Group F has a potential to throw a dark horse in there. I think one of Group F could go quite far. Turkey, Portugal, and the Czech Republic likely to be the three that have the best chance of getting out of that. Maybe Turkey to get out and go a couple of rounds through if they were to draw someone kindly out of the next round. There are a couple of weaker groups in there. Group E, Belgium.
I was going to say, I thought that after the England game in midweek, Belgium They should.
Yeah, but they're absolute bottle jobs.
I know, yeah.
They're
but you look at the players that they've got.
They bottle it as much as Braintree do, honestly. They bottle the big occasion.
Yeah.
It's the bees. I mean,
yeah,
instead of Shaquille Coulthurst, they've got Romelu Lukaku. Yeah,
exactly, yeah.
And yeah. Is it Jeremy Locku who plays for Man City?
Jeremy Doku.
Doku, yeah. He's Charlie Wakefield, is he? He's like that.
And whoever finishes second in behind Doku us winger. In our group has got a bit of a sniff of a little mini run. So maybe Serbia or Denmark.
A sniff of a mini run.
A sniff
There's
of
a place
mini
to
run.
Leave it.
Right.
Cheers, lads.
Well, see you later.
Bank holiday. Yeah.
Have fun.
Up the gloves.
And with a quick turn, skipper Alex Dock slams it in.
There's Lindegaard making Forrest backpedal. Davis looking to help it into the path of Morris. He's standing by the deflection. It's Aaron Davis. He could win it. He probably has won it for Yeovil.
Oh, and it's an opening goal. What a start. Madden, after just 6 minutes, gives Yeovil the lead.
Stansfield, good turn away from Trott. Goal!